Before Pesach, we had a class about selling chametz. And I said in that context that that's perceived as a legal fiction. And I hope that throughout that class I tried to show why I thought it wasn't a legal fiction. So the other thing which suffers from a great deal of cynicism and more is what's called the heter mechira. There were times in history it was just called the heter. All you had to say, heter, and that was enough. Everyone already knew which heter you were talking about. I just wonder today, if you just use the word heter by itself, if people, what they would think that you're talking about. It's interesting. Well, we'll see. I'm not going to talk about the heter mechira at all today. Everything today is just introductory. I do recall seeing, and I know this may be strange, because the next Shemitah is a good couple of years from now, so by that point, none of you will remember anything that I say today. I gave a whole bunch of classes leading up to Shemitah, except I gave all of them on Shabbat, so none of them were recorded. So, therefore, this also becomes perhaps helpful. And I don't believe we're going to finish today, whatever it is that you want to say. I don't believe we're going to finish today. So, just a couple of things as an introduction, and then we'll go further. There seems to be a general consensus among the Datil Umi community, which is obviously a very broad word and can be used in many different ways, but there seems to be a consensus that the best way to deal with Shemitah is something which is called the Otzer Beit Din, which I'm also not talking about at all today, and that perhaps the worst way of dealing with it is by having the Heter Mechira. Okay, I'm saying that there is, I'll say it's more than a consensus. There was a push in that direction. The last two Shemitot, there was a push to, as little as possible, to use that to Mechira. Okay, that I'll deal with. It bothers me a bit, but that I'll deal with. But that's not as bad as the second point. The second point is that I saw all kinds of notices, be it the London Beit Din, which I can speak to them about this weekend when I'm there, be it the American Kashrut organizations, all of them, they gave warnings out. And they told people that be careful, some Israeli produce is hitting the market, and stuff which was sold at Heter Mechira is hitting the markets, be it London, New York, Los Angeles, whatever, be careful not to buy the Israeli produce. So I thought that this was great, that you know, this really should be an article in the Wall Street Journal, how Orthodox Jews are boycotting Israel, at least it wasn't 7 years, maybe more. And I hope that everybody at least appreciates the irony in this, because I understand the mindset. The mindset goes something like this, that we don't live in Israel, so why go there? Why enter into such a difficult halachic problem? And it's better off not going there at all and just, as I said, boycotting. They probably would not like the word boycott. What word would they use? Some other politically correct... Yeah, other politically correct term, which is of no interest to me. Because a boycott is a boycott, so therefore at least be honest enough as far as what it is that you're doing. So I want to start off by saying the following. The law of, just 1 second, this, and then I'll take questions or comments. The law of Shemitah is such that every 7 years the land of Israel must not be worked upon, and those 7 years, there becomes a complication, what it is that we can eat. No offense to God, but there's no good solution as far as what to do in that 7 year. The Torah indicates that there's some kind of a bracha, and God will provide enough extra crops prior to this. There'll be enough crops for 3 years, which would be a wonderful thing. That, by the way, is the best solution. There is actually a huge machloket whether the bracha counts today or not, but now I'm getting ahead of myself. So the ways that people will generally solve this is, one, certain people will find themselves very comfortable buying produce from non-Jews, which, by the way, has two different possibilities: non-Jews grown in the land of Israel and non-Jews grown outside the land of Israel. That itself becomes a huge argument, whether non-Jews, the fact that they're growing the produce, what makes any difference. May not make any difference whatsoever, which means you didn't gain anything by that. And then there are other people who may feel very uncomfortable with buying produce. Reim HaKohen, Rosh Hashiva Otniel, was quoted as saying that he felt that buying produce from certain people who are not exactly Zionists, he felt was akin to supporting murder. Right? Somebody else, who I won't quote, because I'm not convinced this will bring Geula la'olam, he said, you can buy tomatoes from certain same segment of population, but you have to soak them and salt them to take the blood out. Which, again, these are the really strong, what I would call, nationalistic voices saying that on political terms, they have a problem with buying produce, which is grown by people who, as I say, are not necessarily great supporters of the Jews in Zion. The other solution is the solution of the Het HaMechira, which, again, I hope we'll talk about it more next week. The Het HaMechira is very often associated with Rav Kook. It predated Rav Kook. Matter of fact, Rav Kook and his father-in-law, who's known as the Aderet, were both against the Het HaMechira when they lived in Europe. It was only after they moved to Israel that suddenly the world looked very differently once you're living over here, and the Het HaMechira, which I'll say it again, was enacted before him. Actually, the main person behind the Het HaMechira was a rabbi in Europe, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. He was really the main rabbi behind it, while the rabbis in Jerusalem were always against it. And but Rav Kook is the one who somehow gets stigmatized with this, as I said, even though he had once been against it, and later on he ended up supporting it. The other thing is called an Otzer Beitin, which I'm also getting way ahead of myself. If you look at Rav Rimon's book, which is an excellent book on the laws of Shemitah, he credits Rav Kook with coming up with the Otzer Beitin as well. I do not believe that that's factually or historically correct, but it was the favorite solution of the Chazon Ish, and therefore of many people. What that is and how that works, B'li Neder, I'll speak about that as well. If you want the easy... if you want to cheat, and you know, everybody tell you my conclusions, I do believe that the Otzer Beitin is very, very weak, and I believe that the Het HaMechira is very, very strong. But to understand why that would be, we need to start learning a little bit first. The facts are very, very few things go to export unless they went through and Trumot and Masrot were dealt with. I mean, the facts are very. Yeah, but I'm saying, but it goes through places that it was taken beforehand. I think it would actually be very difficult to imagine it happening otherwise. But let's begin. The first question, and this is going to be true in any era of halacha, when any question you're going to ask in halacha, the first thing that you need to know before you talk about any heterim or any dealing with it, the first thing you always need to know is what is the severity of the law that we're dealing with. Right, all areas of halacha at some point can come to some issues of conflict. Right, if somebody asks me, I don't feel well, but Tanit Esther is coming. Should I fast or should I not fast? Okay, that's a good question. Here, I'm not feeling well. That's on the one hand. It's a fast day. That's on the other hand. So, what's the strength of Tanit Esther? Is it written in the Navi? Is it written? Obviously, not in the Torah. Is it written in the Navi? Is it written in the Mishnah? Is it written in the Gemara? Where does it come from? Truth is, Tanit Esther, no one knows where it came from. Generally, the consensus of Tanit Esther is a minhag, which comes post-Talmudic, much, much later, and is just a custom. So somebody doesn't feel well, so they don't fast. Very easy. If I get to something like, for example, Shavasa B'Tammuz, that's written in the Navi. So right away, I have a different strength to it that I may then have to deal with it. So I'm saying, in all areas of law, I always need to know what it is I'm dealing with, which then leads me, I have a problem with Shemitah. What's my problem? My problem is that, what do I do? What do I eat during this seventh year? What are my choices? What are the possibilities? So the first thing I want to know is if in today's day and age, in today's world, is Shemitah, and what are my possibilities? Is it a Torah law? Is it a rabbinic law? Is it less than a rabbinic law? So the correct answer to this question is yes. And what I mean by yes is, yes, there are people who say it's a Torah law. Yes, there are people who say it's rabbinic law. And yes, there are people who say it's something else. What we're going to look at and hopefully understand today is what is the dominant opinion. But in order to do that, I want to actually introduce a second, which for a lot of people is a secondary law having to do with Shemitah. But it's a law which, as far as I can tell, and this is probably what we're going to see today, it has the same contours, which means the questions become the same questions, although it's very, very different. That is something which is called Shemitah Ksafim. One of the laws about Shemitah is that Shemitah cancels all loans. All loans that you make on Shemitah get canceled. So if all loans get canceled, if you lend somebody money, you can't ask for the money back. But it's not yours, the loan got canceled. So in today's age, is Shemitah a Torah law, rabbinic law, or something else? I mean, that becomes the question, therefore, what happens here with this? Now, one of the areas which I think gets, one of the laws that gets thrown around a lot, and more often than not, in my opinion at least, misquoted, is something which is called prusbel. Prusbel seems to be this perspective, and this goes back to our legal fictions. Prusbel seems to be this idea that, okay, if I have loans, I have to cancel the loans, but I just get a prusbel, then I don't have to cancel the loans anymore. And therefore we see that the rabbis have the ability of changing Torah law whenever they want to do it. By the way, if that's my starting point, then I then have to ask my question, so why can't the rabbis change the Torah law in other areas? And what you're going to end up with is that the rabbis are mean, evil, and sexist. No, I'm saying that's going to be the obvious conclusion. Because if they really have this ability, and they don't use it in other areas, I mean, what example do you want me to take? Today, there's a woman who's going on a hunger strike, I believe, in front of the Knesset, because she's been an aguna. Her husband has been sitting in prison for years and years and years, but he refuses to give her a divorce. So why can't the rabbis just say, you know what, let's have a woman divorce her husband, and we're done with it? Why can't every aguna just divorce her husband? So I have a problem with that, because the Torah doesn't seem to give me that ability to say that. Why can't I just cancel the wedding? Okay, that becomes a very good question. So I'm going to say this again. Some people will use prusbel as the example. Look, we can do whatever we want. Was prusbel therefore used by certain, I don't want to use the word sex, but certain parts of Judaism, or not necessarily Orthodox, how is that for dancing around the term, who say, oh look, you know, rabbis did prusbel, so all that you need to do is say, I don't want to do this law, I can change things if I want to. So does prusbel really serve as a case, or as an example, that rabbis really have this power, that they can just change whatever laws that they want to? And I'm going to say it again. If we have that power and we don't use it, then there really is something quite evil. The one who was quoted in this way in one of the more cynical comments of the 20th century was Blue Greenberg, when she says, when there's rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. Basically, the rabbis can do anything they want, if they want to do it, but then obviously rabbis are sexist because they choose not to do this in areas that would really create equality. So, having said all that, let's take a look, and we're going to start with prusbel. What's our real question? Our real question is, so what is the status of Shemitah today? And of course you can say, these two laws of Shemitah, are they actually connected to one another? So that's one of the things that we'll need to see. Is the law of not working the land and the law of canceling debts, are those interrelated, or are those two separate things? Again, I'm giving you a little bit of a hint. We're going to find that they're interrelated. So now, why did prusbel actually work? And then I think we're in for some surprises over here. So let's begin. The Mishnah in Shviat in the 10th chapter deals with Shemitat Ksafim. There are 10 chapters. The 10th chapter deals with Shemitat Ksafim. Shviat mishametet et tamulva, bishtar velo bishtar. Shemitah automatically causes a cessation, a Shemitah, of loans, whether they're written in contracts or not. Hakafat hachanut einu mishametet. What's hakafat hachanut? When you go to the makolet and you say, I'm taking a thing of milk, just write it down and I'll pay you next week. Do they still do this in the makolets? Some, right? Is that considered to be a loan that got cancelled by Shemitah, or is that considered to be something else? So what did it just now say? Hakafat hachanut einu mishametet. Does not get cancelled. That is not a loan. The guy didn't give you a loan. He, rather than a loan, he allowed you to delay payment. Very big difference. A loan versus delaying payment, that's considered delaying payment. Shemitah does not cancel it. The ima samilva, but if you say to them, no, I don't have the money, to the owner, can you please lend me the money, so then it does get canceled. So delaying payment is not the same thing as a loan. Good. Schar sachir. What if you work for me and I don't pay you yet? I owe you the money. Is that considered a loan? It got canceled? anybody who works for a living, right? The owner says, oh, sorry, it's Shemitah, I can't pay you this year. No. Sachar Sachir, Einu Mishamet. That doesn't get canceled. The Ima So Milva, the same thing again. If the boss says to the worker, listen, can you lend me that money? That could be a mistake. I raise a Mishamet. Because what? So you already understand the rules. What's the rule? Loans get canceled. Not every financial obligation is a loan, right? All that simple? Mishnah Bet. Ha'ones v'avimafateh v'amotzi shemra v'kol ma'aseh beitin eino mishamtin. Financial obligations created by a ruling of the court is not considered to be a loan. What is it? A legal financial obligation. So it gave over here various reasons why a person should have to pay money to somebody else, and it says that all of those cases, it did not get canceled. Rather, what is it? A legal obligation. Hamalve al hamashkon, somebody who gives a loan with the collateral, so that also becomes a little bit more interesting. What's the difference in a regular loan and a collateral? So the collateral is, I'm holding on to your thing and you're holding on to my money, so therefore you don't pay me back. I say, great, and I hold on to the collateral. Hamalve al hamashkon v'hamoser shtarotav lebeitin einon mishamtin. Collaterals are not regular loans. And if I took my contracts, by the way, this is the most interesting one of the whole Mishnah. If I took my contracts, my loan contracts, and I brought them to the court, and I gave them to the court, those loans don't get canceled. Now why? Because apparently they just now entered into a new type of obligation, one where the court now has decided that you have to pay the money. Which means personal loans get canceled. Things which are administrated by the court don't get canceled, but rather sort of, and I'll say like the back door, sort of creeped into this other example. What was the other example? It creeped into this thing of monetary obligations which were based upon the court. Good? Good. Next Mishnah, we're already going to read together with source 2, which is the Risham, but this is the very next Mishnah. Pruzbul Einu Mishamet. If you make a pruzbul, and of course we have one problem, we have no idea what the word means. If you make a pruzbul, which means over here, our commentary, which is based on the Yedid Nefesh, which is a commentary in the Rishami, where he writes that I wrote on this loan, I wrote something called a pruzbul. Then it doesn't get canceled. By the way, what's a pruzbul? A pruzbul is a written declaration that all loans that I'm doing will not be canceled. Say, hold it a second, you have to cancel loans. How in the world does a principle work? And then the Mishnah continues, Zechad min advarim shehit kinhil azaken, kisharash nimnua am milavot etze, va'orvino ma shekatuv b'torah, kisham alachapenia devar im livavcha b'li al lemor, v'gomer, hitkin hilal principle. When Hillel saw that as a result of the law of Shmitat Ksafim, what's Shmitat Ksafim? You have to cancel your loans. He saw that what happened is that people stopped lending money. Why would he not lend money during the Shemitah year? Because they're gifts. You're not going to get it back. What does the Torah say? No, there's a mitzvah. If people need money to lend money, and yes, you're not going to get it back. But by the way, there's a whole other issue. What if the person says to you, but I want to give it back to you. Are you allowed to take it? Yes. Should the person say, I want to give it back to you? Yes. What's the concept of prizbul? Other way around. What's the concept of Shemitat Ksafim? That the person who worked the land for 6 years, now anybody can come into their fields and take anything off of their trees or whatever the case, take anything they want. So that person, how is he going to live in the 7th year? He's going to have to start borrowing money. So now what do you tell the guy who has a different kind of job and has money? Don't ask for the money back. In a sense, what you're doing is, by the way, this is social justice. In a sense, what you're doing is you're saying, you've been eating his fruit for free all year, so lend him some money. Basically, find a way of paying. But you're not allowed to do business with Shemitah produce. So here's a way that the Torah, not this is not like a loophole. Here's the way the Torah instituted social justice, that the concept of Shemitah or the burden of Shemitah should be shared by different segments of society. So I hope that explanation you find interesting. But what ended up happening? People started saying, well, I'm just not going to lend because I'm not getting my money back. So what did he then do? So what's better? That the guy gets no money and no food you know, whatsoever during the year, or at least he gets some, but he'll have to pay back at some point. So it's obviously better that he gets something, so he'll create a Kruzbel, because he said it's better to create a loan which won't be canceled, at least the guy gets the loan, than of no loan whatsoever. Good? Good. Continue. Then says, Ze gufo shepruzbel. This is the text of the Pruzbel. Moser ani lechem ish ploni, uploni hadayanim shemakom ploni, shekochov sheyeshli sheegvenu kolzman sheirtza, vadayanim chotmim lematan ohedim. He says, I am hereby writing that the loans that I give, I'm giving them over to the judges, and therefore I should be able to collect them anytime that I want. Now, the first thing that I want you to note is the Pruzbel, which is written in Halacha Bet, is not all that different from what was already written in Halacha Aleph. What did Hillel add? I know that the general way that we represent this is, oh, Hillel changed everything. But hold it a second, how much did he really change? By the way, the big difference is that prior to this, if you took your contracts, your loans, and you brought them to the court, now they become a legal matter of the courts, you can then collect it. All that Hillel did is he said, but if I sign the document and don't bring it to court, that's good enough. It's as if the court has it, because what does the document say? That I'm giving it over to the court. Which means, upon learning about Pruzbel in context, in the Mishnah, you're suddenly a lot less impressed with the creativity of Hillel. So what did Hillel do? So it's not as radical, unless you want to say that the previous halacha, where it says hamosish taratu lebeitin, that is Pruzbel, but it doesn't sound that way. It sounds like that's one thing, and then halacha bet is another thing where you could do a Pruzbel. And I'll say it again, the big difference between the two is one you actually bring it to the court, and the other you don't have to bring it to the court, but you write in it that I'm giving it over to the judges. So there was an interesting flow. I hope you noticed the flow that took place. One was, actual loans have to be canceled. Loans which are legal monetary obligations don't have to be canceled. All that happened over here is, so if I bring my contracts to the court and they get ratified and become legal obligations, they don't get canceled. And what Hill says is, okay, but we can write a contract saying that I'm giving over my loans to the court, and therefore I don't actually have to bring it to the court, but therefore they don't get canceled. And what was it that bothered Hillel? What bothered Hillel is that people were no longer lending money. But it's really interesting, it says, and therefore they're breaking what it said in the Torah. Well, register that away, because that was an interesting phrase as well. It's a very good observation, and there's a whole discussion, who signs it? The Mishnah actually gave two possibilities, either Dayanim sign it, or Edim sign it. And that could make a big difference in how we understand it, but we'll pause with that. Gemara. Okay, so this is the Rishalmi explaining the Mishnah that deals with Pruzbel. Mikan, samchu l'pruzbel shehu min ha-Torah. U'pruzbel dvar Torah? And then it says, hold it, this Pruzbel, is it really a Torah concept? Kishitkin Hillel, samchu l'dvar Torah, he based himself on something which was written in the Torah. Amr Rav Chuna Kashyata Kumi. I once asked this question in front of Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha. Kimanda Amr Ma'asrot Midvar Torah. According to the opinion that says, and you notice the Rishalmi's language is very difficult compared to the Bavli, it's very truncated, it's very short. You need to read a lot more between the lines. The real question over here is, today in Bayit Sheni, Hillel lives in Bayit Sheni. Today in Bayit Sheni, I know we're not in Bayit Sheni anymore, but at the time of the Gemara, it's saying, during the time of Hillel in Bayit Sheni, was Truma a Torah law, or was Truma a rabbinic law? By the way, we can ask the same question today. Truma and Masrot. Masrot midvar Torah. The Hillel matkin al dvar Torah. Did Hillel really make a law which was a loophole trying to change a Torah law? What question did I ask you before is the critical question. Or is Shemitah a Torah law, rabbinic law, or something else? So that's what the Yerushalmi is asking. Hold it. Did Hillel really go and make a takana which will bypass a Torah law? Rav Yossi, וכי משעה שגלו ישראל לבבל לא נפטרו מן המצוות התלויות בארץ? So Rabbi Yossi says, hold it a second. Isn't it true that when the Jews went to Bavel, by the way, which Jews went to Bavel first? The 10 tribes. From the time that the 10 tribes were exiled, didn't that change the obligation regarding mitzvot atulot ba'aretz? It continues and says, v'hashmeit ksafim, meaning shmita ksafim, noav bein ba'aretz, bein b'chutz la'aretz, dvar Torah. Chazu Rabbi Yossi ba'amar, v'zedvar hashmita shamut. This is all, and these are the laws of shmita. Cancel your loans. Bishasha hashmita noheget dvar Torah hashmit ksafim noheg bein ba'aretz bein b'chutz la'aretz dvar Torah. Okay, let me catch you up on what just now happened. According to what we just now read, the law of shmita regarding produce is only on the land of Israel. The law of shmitat ksafim, canceling loans, is all over. But it used this limud, zed dvar hashmita shamut. It used this limud, and what did the limud tell us? That only when shmitat haaretz works, that's when shmitat ksafim works both in Israel and outside of Israel. Continue. Uvishasha shmita noheget midivrehim, and when shmita is only a drabanan, Heshmita ksafim noheget bein ba'aretz bein b'chutz la'aretz midivrehim. Then shmitat ksafim also becomes midrabanan. What's the implication of the latest turn or twist of the Gemara? The implication is that at most, after the 10 tribes were exiled, that shmita suddenly became only midrabanan. Of course, you could say it's only midrabanan, but it's still midrabanan. Taman Amru, in Bavel they said, Sham Amru, Afilu Kamanda Amar, Ma'asrot Dvar Torah, even according to those who say that Ma'asrot are from the Torah still today, or at least at that point, Modi Bishmita Shemidrabanan. In Bavel they taught that Shmita is Midrabanan. Ditani, because we learned, Vized Dvar Shmita Shamut. Again, this double language of Shmita and Shamut. Rebbe Omer, Tribune Nasi, Shnei Shmita Nalalu Shmita, Viyovel Bishasha Hayovel Noheg, Shmita noheget dvar Torah. So now we see another consideration. When does Shmita apply? Only when there's still Yovel. Pasku ha-Yovelot, once there's no longer the Jubilee year, Shmita noheget midivrehim. Then Shmita is only midrabanan. Ematai pasku ha-Yovelot, so when did Yovel stop? Because it's Yoshveha, Vikidashtem et shnata chamishim shana ukratem droba, or it's the whole Yoshveha. You notice the phrase, the whole Yoshveha. And the year of Jubilee shall be sounded for all of its inhabitants. What does the kol Yoshveha mean? Bizman she Yoshveha aleha. Only when all of the Jews are sitting in their proper land. Lo bizman shegalu mutocha, and not regarding the time that the Jews are not there. Now, of course, I used the word just now, all the Jews. The question is now going to come up, how many Jews do you need? Do you need an absolute majority of Jews in the world? What's going on here? We're going to learn, we're going to see, and again, I'm getting ahead of myself, but I have to try to keep you awake a little bit. We're going to find that there are those who are going to say, oh, what does this mean? It means when each of the 12 tribes is sitting in its proper land. If each of the 12 tribes are not in its proper land, because what did Yovel do? What's the whole point of Yovel? Yovel caused the proper lands to be reverted back to their owners. So the whole point of Yovel is that each one's sitting in their proper land. If there's no Yovel anymore, so then there's no Shemitah anymore, at least on a Torah level. Bizman sheyoshveh alav, lo bizman shegalu mitocha. Hayu aleha aval hayu me'orvavin. If they were mixed together, Shevet Yehuda b'Binyamin v'Shevet Binyamin b'Yehuda, Yochayu of Yovelot Nohagin, Talmud Lomer l'chol Yoshveh, l'chol Yoshveh, that everyone needs to be in their proper place. So now you realize that's what the Yerushalmi really says. Even if Binyamin is in Yehuda and Yehuda is Binyamin, that's not good enough. You need all 12 tribes in their proper place. By the way, I do have to stress that has not been the situation ever since Bayit Rishon. Ever since the 10 tribes were exiled, according to what the Yerushalmi is saying, Shemitah is linked with Shemitah Ksafim, and Shemitah is linked with Yovel. Right? So we have two links over here. your veil is dependent upon kol yoshveha, all the Jews being in their proper place, and therefore the obvious conclusion of this Yerushalmi is that Shemitah cannot be Dioraita Bizman Hazan. And I'll say this so strong, there's no other way of reading this Yerushalmi. Nimzet Omer, Kaven Shagolu, Shevet Reuven Vigad Vechatzi Shevet Menashe, but Luha Yovalot. Once the 2.5 tribes went into exile, it's actually the 10 tribes, once even the 2.5 tribes went into exile, there is no more Yovel, Shemitah, or Shemitah Tzafim min HaTorah. Should I say this whole thing differently? Mitzvot HaTluyo Ba'aretz, the mitzvot of connected to the land, are dependent of the Jews being in the land. What does it mean, the Jews sitting in the land? It means the Jews sitting in their proper place in the land. Okay? So for... So what did we just now gain from that whole introduction in the narrow sense in terms of Prisbul? It's saying that, yeah, during Bayit Sheni, Shemitah was Rabbanan, and Hillel then made a Takana. By the way, what did we just now gain from this? If Shemitah was Rabbanan, and Hillel made a Prisbul, do you realize what just now happened? Or did you miss what just now happened? Something very exciting just happened. I know, I'm the only one who gets excited about these things. What happened? Okay, let's work backwards. Let's work backwards. I loan you money. Shemitah comes, and the rabbis say you have to cancel loans. On a Torah level, whose money is that? It's my money. You have an obligation to pay me back. On a Torah level, you have to pay me back. The rabbis come and says, no, let's make believe that Shemitah applies today. So what does that mean, let's make believe Shemitah applies today? So therefore, you get to keep my money. But on the Torah level, it's my money. Should I do that again? I'll loan you money, okay? I loan you money. Whose money is that? So whose money is that? It's my money. It's my money. Torah says it cancels the loans. But we just now said, but Shemitah right now is Midrabanan. So there is no Shemitah. So now, I'll say it again. I loan you money. Whose money is that? It's my money. Do you have an obligation on a Torah level? Yeah, on a Torah level you have to give the money back. But what happens? The rabbi said that Shemitah applies now to Rabbanan. So the rabbis come and say, you don't have to pay your Torah obligation. So what does Hillel do by creating Prisbul? He says that you have to pay me back. So did Hillel just now break the Torah law, or did Hillel just now support Torah law? Just one second. Did you all understand what I just now did? I just turned everything upside down. I apologize, but I just now showed Hillel didn't show you a way of breaking the Torah law. Hillel's he's supporting two Torah laws. What's the other thing is? The other thing is you should lend people money. But people are not lending money because on a rabbinic level you don't have to return it. So the rabbis are stealing my money. I'm sorry for saying it like that. I'll say it again. I lend you money. On a Torah level you have to give it back. The rabbi said, no, don't ask for it back. So therefore, the rabbis are letting you steal my money. On a Torah level, loans are canceled. On a rabbinic level, when there's no Shemitah... So I'll say it again. In a time that Shemitah doesn't apply, on a Torah level you have to give me my money back because there's no Shemitah. Okay, so again, why doesn't Shemitah apply then? Because the Jews are not in their proper land, because there's no Yovel. Once there was an exile of the 10 tribes, there's no longer any Yovel, and therefore there's no longer any Shemitah, and therefore there's no longer Shemitah Ksafim. So I'll do this again. So I'm just saying what comes out of this Yerushalmi so far. What comes out of this Yerushalmi is as follows. If I lend you money, and there's no Shemitah, you owe me the money. The rabbi say, but we should make believe that Shemitah applies. So if we make believe that Shemitah applies, now what happens? You're going to say, I'm not going to pay you back. But on the Torah level, you're obligated to pay me back. So Hillel now does a Prisbul and says, no, but you have to pay him back. So I'm going to say it again. Did Hillel just now do something to break the Torah law? Or did Hillel just now do something to support Torah law? Support Torah law. So you now realize that using Prisbul as an example, how the rabbis can break Torah law whenever they want to, is just completely... I don't know, what word you want to use? Facetious? It's just not true. It's just not true. And there may be a second issue. The second issue is that my lending money to somebody is generally an act of chesed. You lend somebody money, you'll get it back. So it's an act of chesed, not stalker, it's an act of chesed. So now, I'm not going to lend money because the rabbis just now said that they're not going to pay me back. So I'm not going to do this other law. Now, see, what was interesting, the Mishnah says that Hillel saw people stop lending money, as it is said in the Torah. So that's the only line in this whole thing that I'm a little uncomfortable with, but I'm going to try to tweak it. Hold it. It says they're not going to lend money, as written in the Torah. The only thing is it doesn't apply by the Torah, which means it's not a Torah level right now, which is really the conclusion of the Gemara. So Hillel sees that people are not doing what it says in the Torah they should do, even on a rabbinic level, meaning lending money. Why are they not lending money? Which would be at least a fulfillment of a rabbinic, but I think of a Torah law as well, of helping another Jew, lending money. So what is Hillel watching? He's watching that people are not lending money. They lend money. There really is an obligation, but the rabbis cancel the obligation. So by making prizbul, he's actually keeping two Torah laws and allowing people to... I don't know how to say this. He's actually keeping two Torah laws and not breaking any Torah laws. So therefore, it's so different from the way... I don't know, have you ever heard prizbul presented before at all? So as I said, it happens much more in other denominations. They say, oh look, the rabbis can do what they want. Look at prizbul. Hillel just canceled all the loans. The Torah... No, I mean, so yes, anybody's any different, so we started the Yerushalmi. So the sophisticated way of saying this, so what does the Bavli say? Okay, so we have to move over to the Bavli now and see, but that was the way the Yerushalmi worked this out, and for our purposes, as I said, we're very far still from the Heter Mechira discussion, but for our purposes, what have we done? We've tried to establish if Shemitah Bizman HaZeh is a Torah law or a rabbinic law. Why? Because if it's a Torah law, I'm more limited in what I can do. If it's a rabbinic law, then I have a lot more leeway. Let me just move over for Shabbat, for example. If somebody, you know, let's just say, for example, there's a thing you can't do on Shabbat, which is a Torah melacha. I'm pretty stuck unless I'm dealing with, you know, a cholish yesh bo sakana, pekuach nefesh, whatever. Let's say I'm dealing with the rabbinic law. So then I have a lot more leeway. So I'm just saying is that knowing what Shemitah is will make a big difference. So our immediate concern is prizbul, but our more far-range considerations are going to be, so how is all this going to play out in terms of people buying fruits and vegetables all over the world? Yeah. Right, so he chose not to. It's a good question. Could he just have canceled completely? But what he did, I just want to stress this again, what he did is he just went to the previous Mishnah. I mean, that's a bigger question to me. The previous Mishnah says that if you brought your loans over to the court, they're not canceled. Is that even when Shemitah's on a Torah level? If that's even when Shemitah's on a Torah level, right, exactly. So if that's the case, so what Hillel did over here is incredibly minor. He just said, courts cancel it, but we don't have to make you actually bring it to the court. You can just write a legal document which assigns it to the court. That's good enough. And they say, hold it, did he really just go against? No, he went against only when Shemitah's Rabbanan. So you realize that what Hillel did is relatively minor compared to the way that it gets presented. So as I said, so far we've done the Yerushalmi. Okay, source number 3. Hillel Hitkin Prizbul. This is a mission in Gittin. By the way, it's written in Gittin as well. Hillel Hitkin Prizbul b'nei Tikkun HaOlam. Tikkun HaOlam is like one of these postmodern redefinitions of Judaism. The most important thing is Tikkun HaOlam. So here you have Tikkun HaOlam was Hillel's consideration. Why? I think the definition of Tikkun HaOlam very often means macro thinking instead of micro thinking. I don't have time now to show you why I think that's the case, but I do believe that that's what it means. And over here it says that Hillel, because of macro considerations, he instituted prizbul. Source number 4, on the Mishnah in Gittin, which has a whole bunch of things, there's like 3 or 4 pages there that talks about different things that are Tikkun HaOlam, here the Gemara will discuss Shemitah. Because again, the first source we read was the Mishnah Yerushalmi and the Gemara Yerushalmi, but there's no Bavli on Shemitah. Sorry, the Mishnah and the Bavli on Shvi'it, which deals with the sabbatical laws, there is no Bavli on this. So the only place the Bavli discusses it is really like through the back door when it's discussing Tikkun HaOlam in the Gemara of Gittin. Hillel Hitkin Prizbul. Tanan Hatam, we learned. Prizbul Eino Mishamet. Ze Achad Ben Advim Sheitkin Hillel HaZakein. Shirasha Am Nimnu Melavot Ze Et Ze. This is almost word for word the Mishnah in Shvi'it. Va'ovu Amah Shekatuv B'Torah Hishamer Lecha Penyeh Dvar Am Levavcha Bili'al V'Gomer Amar Vitkin Prizbul V'Zeh Gufu Shel Prizbul Masorni Lechem Ploni Dayanim Shebemkom Ploni Shekol Chov Sheyesh Li Eitzel Ploni Shagvenu Kol Zman She'irtza V'Dayanim Chatuim Lamata O Edim. So pretty much all the Gemara in Gittin did is it cited the Mishnah in Shvi'it, telling us what Hillel did, yeah. Because there was another Hillel afterwards. Umi ika midei diaraita mishamet et shviit vehitkin Hillel de lo mishamta? you realize the Yishami asked the same question. Could it really be that Shemitah is from the Torah and Hillel goes against the Torah? Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Bishviyat Bizman Hazeh Birebihi. That we follow Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who we saw cited in the Yerushalmi, and how is it that Hillel possibly made such a law, not against the Torah, he follows, by the way, to say he followed Rebbe is a little funny, because Hillel lives a couple hundred years before Rebbe. Rebbe's actually a descendant of Hillel. But it's saying it's the same idea. Just like we know that Rebbe articulated that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh Rabbanon, Hillel was obviously of the same opinion that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh Rabbanon. It wasn't that Rebbe made this up, it's that actually this is the source of Rebbe. The Tanya, because we have a Braita. Rebbe on there, Vizeh Dvar Shemitah Shamut, Bishtei Shemitot HaKotuv Medaber, Echot Shemitah Karko, Echot Shemitah Ksafim. The canceling the loans is linked together with Shemitah Karka. When you have to rest on a Torah law from not working the land, that's when the loans get canceled. Again, the same thing we saw in the Yerushalmi, that Shemitat Ksafim and Shemitat Karka are linked one to the other. V'tiknu Rabbeinu t'tashamet zecher l'shviyat. V'tiknu Rabbanant t'tashamet zecher l'shviyat. The rabbis made a takana that we shouldn't forget Shemitah, so that it shouldn't be forgotten, we have this idea of Shemitah midrabbanan. Ra Hillel sheninu ami l'havod zedze. He sees that people are no longer lending money. Amar v'tkin pruzbol. Omi ika midi deraita lo meshametet. So could I have a case that the rabbi said that it doesn't, the loans aren't cancelled, and the rabbi said nonetheless it should be cancelled? Abaye says that over here they're just saying don't do anything, which means I don't want to get into Abaye too much, although there is a possibility that Abaye understands things differently, but the question is going to be now, so what do the Rishonim do with all of this? We have a more fully developed sugya in the Yerushalmi. We have a lesser developed sugya over here in the Yerushalmi. So then we move over and let's take a look at a couple of Rashis. One Rashi, number 5. Bishviyat Bizman Hazeh. The Hillel Karebi Sfirle, the Amish Vila La Hashmatat Milva Bizman Hazeh Rabbananu, that the canceling of a loan, the loans canceled, is a rabbinic ordinance. So again, Rashi understood Abaye even as saying, connecting Yovel, which by the way was not mentioned over here, that if you don't have Yovel, then you don't have Shemitah either. Bringing in a Gemara from Erechin, money over lo l'kadesh shmita midrabanan ka'amar. Umatzati b'tamidei Rabbeinu Yitzchak Halevi shakatav mesechet gittin b'Yerushalmi. This is, by the way, one of the numerous examples which seem to indicate that Rashi himself did not have a complete Yerushalmi, because he mentions by somebody who comments on the Yerushalmi, who cites the Yerushalmi, which he could have just said, but it said in Yerushalmi, but he did not do that. And correct, we saw that in the Yerushalmi. Shenemar v'zeh devar shmita shamut echad shmitat yovel ve'echad shmitat shviyit. Aval b'torat kohenim ra'iti. Notice the ra'iti versus the shamati. But I saw that it's in the Torah kohenim. The shviyit noeg b'zman she'en yovel noeg ve'omar ani shehu machloket. So Rashi is left over here with saying that I see among rabbinic opinions two different things. One, I just want to make it clear. One, Shemitat Karka and Shemitat Ksafim are linked one to another. Second, we see an opinion that Yovel is linked with Shemitah as well. Rashi over here says, but I didn't see that in the Torah Kohanim, so it sounds like there may be a machloket on this point. So now what we're left with is, okay, so which way does all of this work today? On the other hand, we have a Rashi in Source 6, which I really hope to get back to, although I'm beginning to doubt that I will get there. We'll skip the Rashi in 6. Let's go straight to 7. The Rambam on his commentary on the Mishnah and Shviyat. It's going right down to where it's underlined, Ubiro. Shetakanat Hillel, Eina Ela B'Shviyat Bizman Hazeh Shum Imid Rabbanan. Hillel only sidestepped a rabbinic law. He never sidestepped a Torah law. Ki Hashem Amar, V'Zed Devar HaShvita, שמות. ואומר בשתי שמיטות הקוטב מדבר. אחד שמיט הקרקע ואחד שמיט הכספים. בזמן שאתה משמיט קרקע, אתה משמיט כספים. בזמן שאין אתה משמיט קרקע, אין אתה משמיט כספים. ותקינו רבונן, דתשמיט זכר לשביעית, ונמצאת שהשביעית בזמן הזה, דלקי יובל, נוהג מדרבנן. So the Rambam, I think, is very, very clear. He adopted this Yovel argument. He says that Shmita bizman is ez Rabbanan, right? Shmita is ez Rabbanan. And what's the biggest proof it's Rabbanan? Otherwise, how can Hillel ever have done this? Because again, the Gemara asked the question, could Hillel really sidestep a Deraita? What's the Gemara's answer? No, he can't do this. So therefore, he says, oh, why? Because Shmita is dependent on Yovel. There's no Yovel today, the Rambam says, and therefore Shmita is Rabbanan bizman ez. Now, I will tell you, we can decide how many Rambams we want to read through right now. There's a whole bunch of them. I will tell you that there's no question in my mind that the Rambam believes that Shemitah Mizman is Edrabanan. But by the way, why is that so important? That's what the Rambam believes. So we need to go back a little bit into our halachic history. Most people who wrote opinions about halacha during the Middle Ages only wrote about things which were halacha lema'aseh. Most halacha books only dealt with halacha which were practical halachot. The Rambam is the exception, because the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, and in his Sefer HaMitzvot, and in his Perish of the Mishnayot, writes about all Taryag Mitzvot. He doesn't skip anything. So the Rambam is going to talk about Mitzvot Tluot Ha'aretz Bizman Hazeh, and he's going to talk about it in a bunch of cases. So I'm going to say it again. So why is the Rambam so important? Because if nobody else, meaning, if there's a situation where the Rambam says one thing, a Tosfot says something else, so then we can then use whatever tools we have to decide what the halacha is. But when you have a whole realm of law where the Rambam is the primary speaker, then his opinion becomes that much more important. Is that clear? Because there's really not that much of a discussion. Let me put it this way. Anybody who has studied the laws of Shviat, what have they done? They learn the Mishnah, they learn the Yerushalmi, they learn a couple of different sugyot in the Bavli, and then they learn the Rambam. That's really what there is. Are there going to be some commentaries on the Yerushalmi here? Yes, there will be. But the Rambam is the main one who codifies the law, so there is no Shulchan Aruch over here afterwards. What you have is the Rambam, so the Rambam is going to become, on the laws of Shvi'it, and generally Mitzvot Tzuli Ba'aretz, the most important voice. So that's why I'm saying, let's take a look now what the Rambam does with all of this, and you already know what he's going to do with this, because he already gave you a hint. We'll see, there is a reference to it, and we'll see if we get to that. Source number 8. Predictably, the Rambam in the laws of Shemitah v'Yovel. Ein Shemitat Ksafim Noheg min HaTorah b'Shviit, Ela b'zman shehayovel noheg sheyesham Shemitat Karka, shrei yoshuv HaKarka leba'alav b'lo kesef. V'dover zeh kabalahu. That's a tradition. So, by the way, where did you see the tradition? You saw it in the Yerushalmi. What did we just now learn? That Shemitat Ksafim is dependent upon Yovel. אמרו חכמים, בזמן שאתה משמיט קרקע, אתה משמיט כספים, בכל מקום, בין לארץ בין לחוץ לארץ, ובזמן שאין שם שמיט הקרקע, אין אתה משמיט כספים בשביעית אפילו בארץ. So, these three points, Yovel, שמיטה כספים, and שמיטת הקרקע, are all tied up with one another. גימל, מדברי סוף, ששמיטה כספים נוהגת בזמן הזה מכל מקום, on the rabbinic level, Shmitat Ksafim applies all over, not just the land of Israel. Even without Yovel. And now we've already seen that three times. Right, we saw it in Rashi, we saw it in the Gemara, now we see it again. That why do we have Shmitat Ksafim Bizman Hazeh? Zecher. So that it doesn't get forgotten. What's going to be the obvious question? What about Shmitat Karka? Is that also just Zecher, that it doesn't get forgotten? How strong is this Shmitat Karka today? Which means, we just now saw that they're linked, so now how strong is the link going to be? So I'm leaving that as an open question right now. Halacha Ted Zayin. Kishara Hillel Hazaken, Shenimne'ua Amilavot Zed Zeva, Ovrima Katuv Betarai Shemer Lacha, Peni Elacha Devar, Hitkin Pruzbo, Kidei Shelo Yishmei Lachov, Ad Sheyavavu Zed Zeh. Ve'ena Pruzbo, Ela Bishmitat Ksafim Bizman Hazeh, Shehimi Divrei Sofrim. By the way, should that be all that surprising right now? No, this has really been quite consistent. We saw it in the Yerushalmi, we saw it in the Bible, we've seen it in the Rambam. Aval Shmita Shel Torah, Ena Pruzbo Mo'ilba. when it comes to Shemitah from the Torah, then Prozbul can't help because they can't change it. By the way, I still have the question. What about Moser Shtarot, the Beitin? What about, you know, the actual bringing? So maybe that would still work, but as I said, that's really a side interest. Source 9 is the Rambam in Perek Yud. Mishagala Shevet Ruvain V'Shevet Gad V'Chatzi Shevet Menashe B'Tlua Yovelot. When did Yovel end? When the first couple of tribes went into... And by the way, those are the first of the 10 tribes that left. That's it. It means during Bayit Rishon, we already lost Yovel, and we already lost Shemitah. Shenema Rukratim Dror Ba'aretz L'chol Yoshveha Bizman Shekol Yoshveha Aleha. See, I know that there are various rumors about this. There are some people who say, oh, Shemitah right now is Bizman is Ezra Banan. But within the next 7 years, if most Jews in the world live in Israel, that's it, then Shemitah is Doraita. Could be people say that. The Rambam doesn't. Rashi didn't seem to say that. Rashi seems to say, no. You need the Jews in their proper tribal lands, and which of course is quite difficult. We don't know where the 12 tribes are. We don't have all 12 tribes. We don't have the other side of the Jordan River. Yes? Which means the odds of Shemitah by, what is it, 5 years from now? The odds of Shemitah in 5 years now being Doraita, all I can say is halavai, but certain geopolitical things may have to change dramatically, and for that matter, I think we may actually need Mashiach to come before we're going to find all of our last tribes and identify them properly and put them all in their proper land, which means the odds of getting Shemitah, Bizman Hazed Yoraita, sounds to be, at least according to what we're reading now, to be quite difficult. That was the Yerushalmi. The Rambam says, not only do you need the tribes, you need them, each of them sitting in their proper land. Bizman shayovel noog ba'aretz noog b'chutz la'aretz shenema yovel hi b'kol makom nei habayit ben shelo bnei habayit. So therefore, I'm going to say this again, the Rambam seems to be quite clear, linking Shemitah, the two Shemitot, and Yovel as well. Halacha Tet, top of page 3. ובזמן שיובל נוג נוג דין עבד עברי ודין בתי רחומר ודין שתי חרמים ודין שתי אחוזה ומקבלם גרטושה ונוגן שביעת בארץ. So here you see the Rambam say it. That when there's Yovel, that's when Shemitah counts. Which means the Rambam just now linked together Shemitah and Yovel. You don't have Yovel, you don't have Shemitah min HaTorah. ובזמן שאין היובל נוהג, אין נוהג עבד עברי ולא בתי רחום ולא שתי אחוז ולא שתי חרמים ואין מקום גרטושה ונוהג שביעית בארץ מדבריהם. By the way, can somebody tell me honestly, can you debate this point, whether the Rambam believes that Shemitah Zman is Ezra Banan? Does this seem like absolutely impossible to argue? Right? It seems impossible. What? He's consistent, and he says it multiple times. He's going to say it again in Halacha, in Source 10, which is Hilchot Beit HaBechira, which is interesting, and this is actually important. Let's read 10. This is Hilchot Beit HaBechira. It's the law of the Beit HaMikdash. V'lamani omer b'mikdash Yerushalayim shekdusha rishona kdusha la'atid lavo. When it comes to Yerushalayim, UNESCO doesn't seem to know this. When it comes to Yerushalayim, the kdusha remained forever. U'v'kdushat sharetz Yisrael le'inyin shvi'it u'masot kiyotzam lo kidshu la'atid lavo. He's saying that when they built Bayit Sheni, it retained the Kedusha of Bayit Rishon, which is, I can ask a question now. When they built the Beit HaMikdash, and then it was destroyed, did the Har HaBayit retain the Kedusha? The Rambam is saying yes. Har HaBayit remains the Kedusha. So he's saying that the Mikdash in Bayit Sheni still had the Kedusha from Bayit Rishon, but the rest of Eretz Yisrael regarding the laws of Shviat. I want to be careful, because someone's going to read this and say, hold it a second, that means that there's no mitzvah to live in Israel. That's not what he said. He said, he says that the Kedusha of the Mikdash in Yerushalayim never ended, but the Kedusha of the rest of Israel, le'inyan Shviat u'ma'asrot u'kiyotzim and lokat shalatid lavo, which means the Rambam is saying that Shviat and Truma and Ma'aser mitzvah nazeh is drabanan. You can never cancel the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah never left the Har HaBayit. The Makom Mikdash retains its Kedusha forever, V'rei hu omer v'hashmioti v'hashimoti et miktoshechem v'amru chachamim afo pi sheshomamim biktushatan hein malim. Aval chiyuv ha'aretz b'shvi'it uv'masrot eino eleshehu kibush rabim v'kevin shenilkacha ha'aretz miyadehim botel ha'kibush v'nifter min ha'torah min ha'masrot min ha'shvi'it sh'rei eino eretz Yisrael u'kevin shela Ezra v'kidsho lo kitshu b'kibush ela b'chazaka shechizkuba ulofich kol makom shechizkuba loy bavel nitkadash kedushat Ezra shniya harei hu mukdash hayom v'af al pi shenilkacha ha'aretz mimenu v'chayev b'shvi'it uv'masrot haderech shebi'arnu b'ilchot truma. This law just now got a lot more complicated. What happened during Bayit Sheni? And he says, look what I wrote in Hilchot Ma'asrot. But I really don't want to read all of them, but I'm going to leave 11 for you to read. 12 we'll leave as well for now. Yeah, he said that the rest of the land doesn't have the Kedusha regarding Trumot and Masrot and regarding Shvi'ah. Not because it doesn't have inherent Kedusha. Not because there's not a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's because, for example, the mitzvah of Shvi'ah is dependent upon the all inhabitants being there. Meaning Eretz Yisrael has Kedusha, but it doesn't have the mitzvah of Shvi'ah. The mitzvah of Shvi'ah is a technical thing. So I understand how you say, hold it a second, why did I move here? I go back to South Africa, right? What am I doing? So he says, no. That Eretz Yisrael has Kedusha, but perhaps not Kedusha regarding the laws of Truma Tanas, Rotem, regarding the laws of Shvi'ah. Excuse me? As I said, he said it enough other places that I don't have to work all that hard. But this is the one which was a little bit more confusing. Let's look at source. Should we do 12? The Meiri. Let's look at source number 13. This is the Sefer HaTrumot. You see, written 1190, a contemporary of the Ramban. Gamar of Zechariah, so he's quoting somebody known as the Baal Ma'or, Zechariah Halevi. B'tshuvoto posak she'enu noig achshav. And this is really what he says. So we have to like skip a whole bunch to get to his point. But he says, he essentially understands that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is not even a Drabanan, that it's a Midat Chasidut. It's a nice thing to do. So, we just have to go one step further and see if anybody says Duraita. So, hold on for 1 second. We'll look at source 14, the Kesef Mishnah. Umasha katav chutz mishviyat ba'aretz lo kai elo shmita ksafim de'ilu shviyat ba'aretz af bizman hazeh hu minat Torah kemosha katavti. Somehow, remarkably, the Kesef Mishnah, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, those who try to explain it, like the source right afterwards, it's a Quirkus, he says it must be that the Kesef Mishnah was not reading what we read. If he read the Rambam that we read, it can't be that he thinks the Rambam said is Doraita. He says it must be he had a different text in front of him. But let me just pause for a second. The vast majority of Rishonim, when they learn through the whole sugya of Shvi'it, believe that Shvi'it Bizman Hazeh Drabanan. Why would they believe that? Because that's what it said in the Rishonim. That was pretty much what it said in the Bavli. You have essentially two exceptions on both going in both directions. You have like this voice here, the Kesef Mishnah expresses that Shmita Bizman Hazeh is Midrabanan. Sorry, take that back. You have the Kesef Mishnah saying that Shmita Bizman Hazeh is Dioraita. You have people then question, how can you possibly say this? And either he had a bad day, made a mistake, a typo in what he's writing, or there's a typo in what he's reading. The other exception is what we just saw in the Sefer HaTrumot, who claimed that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is not even a Drabanan, it's less than a Drabanan. By the way, primarily what he was addressing was the issue of loans. So he's saying that if I lend somebody money, and let's say I didn't, let's say I didn't write a prosbul, so the idea of canceling the loan is a midat chasidut. So I'm saying, it's okay, you don't have to pay me back. Not that I'm obligated to do it, not even I'm obligated to midrabanan. That is considered to be a righteous thing to do. How he got to Middle Chassidut is a good question, but I'm going to say it again. From everything we've seen today, and honestly, I had to work much harder to find the Middle Chassidut, and I had to work much harder to find this Kesef Mishnah. The normative conclusion of what we've studied is that Shemitah Zman is a Midrabanan. Why is it Midrabanan? L'Shemitah Ksafim? Well, let's just work backwards. Why do I say Shemitah is Drabanan? First of all, the Gemara said it. Why did the Gemara say it? Because it said, how else can Hillel have canceled the loans? Did Hillel really go against the Torah law? Good question. Answer, no, of course not. Why not? Because Shemitah is Midrabanan. And therefore told me that Shemitah and Shemitah Kesafim are linked. That was one linkage that was created. The other linkage that was created was between Shemitah and Yovel. So once there is no Yovel on the Torah law, there's no Shemitah, and Yovel is dependent on the Jews being there, and Kol Yoshveha. So the only question is, did we really follow both? Because we saw Rashi saying, I've seen that, I've heard there's such a Yerushalmi, and I've seen that there was this other source that didn't link it with Yovel. So what did we see when we got to the Rambam? Yeah, he does make this linkage. So therefore, to make this, I hope, really, really easy, Bizman Hazeh, we don't have Yovel. Why don't we have Yovel? We don't have Kol Yoshveha. So if we don't have Yovel, we don't have Kol Yoshveha, so what else? So therefore we have no Shemitah Aretz, and therefore we have no Shemitah Ksafim, and therefore Hillel can do the Prizbul. Hillel's doing the Prizbul, A, does not seem all that far from handing your loans over to the court. B, Hillel did this in a time that Shemitah was Midrabanan. Hillel therefore was not sidestepping the Torah law. Hillel was actually implementing Torah law because the loans actually were not canceled, and therefore the money belonged to the person who lent it. So Hillel actually instituted something which made the Torah law being supported, and the right person gets their money back. So therefore, this whole rumor about how Prizbul may work, I think we've come to the conclusion that it's not the case. Again, for us, there was a side interest in this. What was the side interest? The side interest is, hold it, how is all this going to affect Shemitah Haaretz? And rather than trying to stick that in, we're going to stop here, bring the same sources next time, and now we'll continue next time, and then see how this plays itself over when we get to Shemitah Karka and Shemitah Haaretz, and what the possibilities. And from there, hopefully, I'll be able to get both to the Het Mechira and to the Otzer Beit Din. But as I said, first, more a little bit more surprising things that we're going to see next time, and then suddenly we'll have to ask ourselves, hold it a second, is the Het Mechira all that difficult based on what we're seeing? Because based on what we're seeing so far, everything's Midrabanan, but there's still some twists and turns to all this that we need to get to. What do you mean? Which case? Well, the Prizbul he's saying is, let's try to encourage people to lend the money anyway and have them return the loans. Right. He's creating a situation that people will lend the money again and then the rightful owner will get his money back. So it's not breaking the Torah law, it's actually supporting the Torah law. At most you can claim it's sidestepping a rabbinic law, but even the sidestep was doing something which already existed in the previous Mishnah, of making it not a personal loan, making it into a court loan.